Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is Why the Stage is Set for AI in Healthcare and Diagnostics. The presenter is Ajit Singh, PhD, partner, Artemon Ventures, Palo Alto, California.
Okay. We are running approximately 10 minutes behind, and I'm going to try and make up for some of it. And I was supposed to speak for 15. I'll keep it less than that, and then maybe we have to cut the panel discussion short by a few minutes as well. This is a long presentation, but it can be delivered in 15 minutes for two reasons. I speak an Indian accent. It's faster. You know, when we were testing various AI systems, of course, the system had problem catching up with me, as you'll probably see here. And I asked, what are the reasons? He goes, Ajit, you are a corner case. So I didn't know what a corner case are. What's a corner case? Well, an edge case is where one parameter is such that the system fails, and a corner case is where two parameters are such where the algorithm will fail. So I said, okay, you know, one edge case I can understand. I speak the accent. What's the second reason? He goes, oh, you speak grammatically correctly. That's the advantage of being an immigrant. Okay, so this presentation is not about large language models. It's not about ChatGPT. There's plenty of narrative there. Various workshops within this conference are focused on that topic. And it's not, I'm not focused on it because it's unimportant. It's important. But I'd rather focus on a few fundamentals, and if you can have a couple of takeaways from there, that'll be very useful. So five broad topics. I just want to take some anecdotes from the last three Executive War College meetings and see if the anecdotes we picked up from those signal some sort of a trend. And as the previous three speakers, Michael Simpson and Yossi and Leo, all pointed out, they do see a trend. Much of it is sort of, if you will, fueled by technology being ready, but also some payment models emerging. And then I think most importantly, myth versus reality. What is possible today? And then, of course, you know, what can it do for you, and how can you be prepared? At EWC 2018, I showed this chart for the 10 most important use cases of AI. And at the bottom, you'll see I circled two of them, which was primary diagnosis and then advanced image diagnosis, image-based diagnosis. And then I showed this chart which was a 2017 paper saying algorithm better at diagnosing pneumonia than radiologist. And I made a key point. It's not that it is better than all radiologists. No, can't be. It simply has learned an average of the radiologist learned from, so it cannot be better. Mathematically, it cannot be better than the best radiologist. Okay? It cannot even be better than the average radiologist. It's learning the average. So it cannot be better than the average of the one it's learning from. Can it be better than the average of the entire possible universe of radiologists? Absolutely. What is much more important is it's more consistent than radiologists, maybe consistently incorrect, which that possibility is low, but it is consistent compared to the human performance. In 2021, I talked about the work that IBEX had been doing and the fundraise, and there were four key sites, Core Plus, that Yossi talked about earlier today, LDPath, Medipath, and Maccabi in France. And today, as Yossi talked about, there is 50 of them. Each one of them had some performance parameters in terms of efficiency, in terms of correctness rate, measured various different ways. And then I made a point that in the future, that radiologists and pathologists will be really viewed as information specialists. They are somehow decision specialists, if you will. Dave King, former CEO of LabCorp, spoke at this conference some 10-odd years ago, and he said, well, LabCorp, or lab for that matter, is a logistics business with a wet lab on the side. 6-7 years later, he spoke at the J.P. Morgan conference and said, no, lab is a data business with a wet lab on the side. And logistics, by the way, is taken for granted. 2024, you've already seen this chart. So if you've gone from no installation and some PowerPoint slides to some installations in 2018, a small number, 4, and then 50, and that's just one company in 2024, that is indicative of a trend. You know, going from 1 to 2 to 3 to 5 could be anecdotal.
going from 5 to 50 signals some trend. Let's go back to 2018 for a different reason. I spoke of a different use case which had to do with using AI for clinical trial enrollment, which was a very small subset of AI in drug discovery and drug design. And I showed this paper that talked about the various stakeholders, if you will, in the use of AI for drug discovery. In 2021, we talked of a market report that signaled that trend as well. The same chart, I'll go back a couple of slides, if that's still possible. No? Okay. I'll go back to this slide. One more. Look at this slide, circa 2017. Let's fast forward to the one published in 2023. Okay? I'm going to zoom in on the upper quadrant, if you will, if I could call that. So it is a clutter. It is a clutter of companies, both provider side and the user side, which are using AI in various stages of drug discovery and drug development and patient enrollment and clinical trials and so on and so forth. There is a play for labs there. It's obvious. Specifically what the play is what we'll focus on, hopefully at the panel discussion. So what trends do they signal? Well, for one, a caution. The plural of anecdote is not a trend. So if you've seen this picture of Picasso, he's done many renditions of it. Of course, there's a ton of clutter there, but you can see through it. There's the Velazquez that lies behind. I repeat, you can see this picture is a Picasso rendition after a couple of good substances. Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, he won't be arrested in the United States this year, of course. Yeah. In most states, I think. So the signal, the trend that is signaling is also correlated with the amount of dollars that are going into AI-based startups. And Leo, you made the point earlier, yes, we can build based on investor money, but at the end, the customer money has to create the returns. And if the customer money is not there, maybe initially the investors will come in and they eventually will taper off. And we did see a very long cycle of tapering off for nearly a decade between 2010 and 2020. That has changed. Starting 2019, that trend has reversed. And a lot of that reversal came from the learnings from two things. Number one, applications in pharma. So the investors realized even if clinical diagnostics and practical clinical routine use is still some years away, the pharma applications are here and they'll pay for it. Equally importantly, other countries started adopting. They have different payment models. Some are self-pay, some are government-funded. They started adopting. So those two trends, I repeat, use in pharma and use in other countries. In other countries, 2A and 2B, 2A being self-pay, 2B being government pay, the investment started to increase again. And you can see, maybe the chart is not so readable in the back, but gestalt, you can see there's an upward trend. Companies by geography, the good news is we in the United States are still way ahead of our nearest competitor. We can say they are smaller countries, smaller applications, but these companies are global. They may be countries with smaller population, smaller GDP per capita, but the companies they are fostering or they are engendering are actually universal, are global. So the fact that US is still at the forefront of investments and the number of companies created, signals a positive trend for the adoption in our country. So myth versus reality, two things have changed since the beginning of AI. Number one, there is ton more data. There's ton more compute power as well, but that's not the rate limiting factor. That was never the rate limiting factor. Early adopters are always willing to pay more. Okay, early adopters are always willing to pay more. So the expense of compute power is never the rate limiting factor. The rate limiting factor was not enough data to learn from. And then availability of enough data to discover enough corner cases. I was talking to a colleague of mine who was at Apple earlier, was responsible with both the AirPods and Siri. For AirPod, for the noise reduction, for Siri, for learning various accents. And then he was at Meta. And he says, but it's all about corner cases. And I said, explain to me what corner cases are. And he walked me through the logic. And he goes, look, in speech processing, everything is a corner case. So much happens, the background noise happens, your accent changes, you get agitated, you get irritated, you speak faster, you speak slower. Everything is a corner case. So now the fact that there is so much data available that even we can learn the corner cases correctly, that has what's made the difference. So obviously there has to be a systemic way to address the corner cases and not say it's an exception. In many applications in AI and elsewhere, we can say, well, the algorithm's limits are these and rest is an exception. We don't have that luxury in mission-critical applications. So a systemic elimination of bias, systemic way to address corner cases will be critical. There's an example I have used before at this conference. If you've seen this before, please forgive me. But I think it's worth telling for the simple reason that maybe some people who are new. If you've ever driven behind a self-driving car from Google and others, it's pretty irritating. Why? It follows all the traffic rules. It even slows down at a yellow traffic light. Yeah. Now, more importantly, they have some 12 sensors. And to Google's admission, 2 days or 5 years ago, 4 years ago, they had taken 2 million miles of learning to reach that stage of a self-driving car, which is mostly an irritating self-driving car. And they said to reach the human level of performance where you can make these split-second, last-minute decisions, sometimes you end up breaking a rule, sometimes you end up bending a rule a little bit for all good reasons, sometimes for bad reasons, but very often for not so bad reasons. You're trying to avoid an accident. It's a perfectly good reason to speed up at a yellow light. I won't say that to my kids, but yeah. So 30 million miles where humans can learn in 30,000 miles really well. I mean, I learned to drive in Fargo, North Dakota. Don't ask me why. But that's because there's 50 million years of learning. Evolutionary biology teaches us to recognize one thing really well. That's pattern recognition. So we're able to apply those learnings, whereas a system has to learn that from scratch. 2 million miles, 30 million miles. Now let's apply that. So there were 12 free variables in a self-driving car, right? So LiDAR, radar, camera, et cetera, et cetera. And it has to do two things well. Follow the lane and don't hit someone. That's all they have to do. So 12 variables, 2 output parameters. And follow the traffic rules, obviously, 3 maybe. For breast cancer, if you want to do it in its full rigor, de novo, there are roughly 43 variables. Each one of them can have multiple states. Some are off and on, ER positive, ER negative. Some have multiple states of expression. Even if you reduce the not so important parameters, still left with 26 parameters. And on the average, there are 4 states. So 4 to the power of 26, that's the amount of data you need. That's roughly 7 billion cases worth of data. Okay? Not enough people on the planet. Now, of course, as Yossi, you said, showed in your slide earlier, and as you did, Leo, there are good working examples of breast cancer. So why did that happen? How did that happen? A, we took some human learning, we symbolified it, and gave it in addition to the data. The good news is we can learn quicker. The bad news is we'll also learn bad behavior. We'll also learn mistakes. We will also learn inconsistency. And that's natural for a technology that is starting. More importantly, simply replicating human knowledge is a bad idea. We know that. I mean, because there are biases built in. So hence, the important use cases should be pick the ones with low dimensionality first. Picking something with very high dimensions, 43 free variables, compared to, say, pneumonia, if you're a radiologist, 5 or 6 free variables, or prostate cancer, 6 to 12 free variables, it's a much better use case to start with. So when you see, let's say, for example, the Core Plus example, we saw prostate, that was not just because it was an easy thing to do. No, it's because it's a smart thing to do to get success with low dimensionality problems first before you get yourself the first failures in high dimensionality problems. Use cases where the high negative predictive value is of value. The initial goal is not to build a system that will be better than the super expert. It's even mathematically not possible. The initial goal can only be get access to experts to help the non-experts. Get access to experts to improve access. Okay, to improve access. So if you have higher efficiency, it is also a proxy for better access. And better access is not only a problem in developing nations. It's a problem in rural and suburban population in our country as well. Okay, so the dichotomy is take the existing knowledge, model it, and help AI systems, or do a net new learning. So in case of prostate cancer, we were able to get away with net new learning. Start with the raw data itself and off you go. In breast cancer, that is unrealistic. We'll have to apply some experiential human learning, help the AI system to get started. So in the existing knowledge, there's been many successes. I end with breast cancer in that list. And in the ones that are, that we use net new knowledge, a company in my portfolio, CellWorks, other companies like Genexus, Second Opinion has kind of moved off from their original goal. But that's where the net new learning concept is relevant. Back to principles, what can you do to implement AI? So number one, ensure enough data. Earlier, Mike Simpson, you made the point of get data into cloud despite the resistance that you might be facing. That's going to be critical. Don't be shy in including corner cases. So it's the corner cases from which we will learn how to deal with corner cases. So the more exceptions, the better. Otherwise, we oversimplify the algorithm, and then you complain about accent and good grammar. Systemic AI. So this is a repeat of the slide before. It's only to highlight what we as developers and adopters need to do. And of course, as I said earlier, ideally focus on low dimensionality problems and focus on those use cases that don't expect you to be better than the expert. That is unrealistic. I'm going to close with a learning from Dr. Mike Modick, who taught me this in 1993, so 30 years ago. This was in radiology. So we, by the way, in this room, full of pathology and lab people, we can learn a ton from radiology because they were roughly two decades ahead of pathology. So Mike Modick said, well, AI will not replace radiologists. But radiologists using AI will replace radiologists not using AI. Okay, that will happen. That's endemic. That's bound to happen. So the issue is to be or not to be. The issue is not one of adoption. The issue is it is going to happen. There is no question about it. The issue is, how can you be ahead, taking into account the technology limitations, the human limitations, the change resistance limitations, and most importantly, payment systems. And with that, I will end my presentation. And the reason I say, my last comment about, we will never replace humans. No technology ever did that. It always reapportioned where we ended up working in the future. So things of nature such as emotion, understanding, consciousness, creativity, most important, empathy, those are things that will remain hallmarks of human presence. And that is not about to go away. That is not about to go away. I was at an AI conference in India recently, Synapse, and we invited also a panel of creative people. So there was a film star, there was a film director, there was a screenplay writer, and there was a poet. And I asked the question, can AI be creative? And the poet instantly jumped in and said, no chance. It never had a bad childhood. With that, I rest my case. Thank you very much.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.